Today on Bob and Eart Live, the Washington Post claims that parents do not have the right to educate their kids. Children as young as 6 years old are... Oh, well, I can't say that on air. A two-year-old baby girl is put to death by the UK courts. The abortion crowd is now here to tell us that even full-fledged adults don't have a right to life. All that and more here on Bob and Eart Live. That's right, it's Bob and Eart Live. I am your host, Dominic Enyart. If you've made the mistake of going on the internet over the past week, you might have seen a headline from the Washington Post. And this headline is reason number one to keep your kids out of the government school. You heard me right, it's reason number one. My dad had 4,329 reasons to keep your kids out of the government schools, but I am going to start with a clean slate, and here's reason number one to keep your kids out of the public schools. From the Washington Post, the headline reads, "Parents claim they have the right to shape their kids' school curriculum. They don't." That's the headline. In the headline, it's saying blatantly, parents do not have the right to teach their kids what they see fit. The article starts off by talking about a bunch of Republicans who are trying to pass legislature and who have passed legislature, and Republicans campaigning on the idea that parents have fundamental rights over their children. And the article puts parents who are concerned for the well-being of their children in a very bad light. Reading from the article now, given this frenzy, and the frenzy being the Republicans who have passed legislature to uphold parental rights, one might reasonably conclude that radicals are out trying to curtail the established rights that Americans have over the educational sphere. Yet what's actually radical here is the assertion of parental powers that have never previously existed. So let me read that one more time. I don't want this to go over your head. Yet what's actually radical here is the assertion of parental powers that have never previously existed. So the article, it's not just saying that parents shouldn't have the rights to teach their kids and to shape their curriculum. No, it's actually saying that parents never did have the right to teach their children. It actually is saying the idea that parents should have the right to teach their own kids or to choose what curriculums to use, it's claiming that as a radical notion. I will note the next sentence, quote, "This is not to say that parents should have no influence over how their children are taught." But what's funny about that sentence is the rest of this article goes on to say that parents should have no influence over how their children are taught. It's kind of a weird sentence to throw in there, that parents should have some influence over how their children are taught, when the rest of the article says that they shouldn't. The article continues to make the case, saying common law and case law in the United States have long supported the idea that education should prepare young people to think for themselves, even if that runs counter to the wishes of the parents. The Washington Post quotes legal scholar Jeff Shulman, "This effort may well divide child from parent, not because socialist educators want to indoctrinate children, but because learning to think for oneself is what children do." So this guy Jeff, my buddy Jeff over here, he's claiming that the divide between parents and children is not because socialist educators want to indoctrinate children. And I know from firsthand experience that that is not true. It 100% is a lie. Growing up, I was homeschooled. My parents raised me and schooled me, and so I largely was not in the public school setting. Most of my friends were other homeschoolers, but I did play hockey growing up for the local high school, and I knew a lot of kids who went to public school. And over the years, I got to know a lot of kids who went to the local public schools. And I started to question my parents. I would hear them talk about how abysmal the public schools are. And I would look around and I would see my friends at hockey and think, well, these kids are pretty cool. They're my friends, you know? And so I didn't really fully understand what my parents were saying until it must have been my sophomore year in high school that I coincidentally was at the local public school with one of my friends. And my friend introduced me to his teacher. And she was a psychology teacher. Now, I was trying to be pleasant, so I said hello. I asked how she was doing, how her day was going and all that. And within 20 seconds of our conversation starting, and I kid you not, it was within 20 seconds of our conversation starting, she was trying to convince me that communism was the correct form of government and that the Bible was absurd. That was in 20 seconds of me meeting her. And it was in that moment that I recognized that everything my parents had been saying was true. And so you get this guy Jeff, my buddy Jeff, and he's saying that there aren't socialist educators who want to indoctrinate children. Well, that's a lie, Jeff. It's not that you don't know better. It's a lie, and you know it's a lie, and you should be ashamed of yourself and come to Christ and ask for forgiveness. Now, continuing with the article, it asks, when do the interests of parents and children diverge? Generally, it occurs when a parent's desire to inculcate a particular worldview denies the child exposure to other ideas and values that an independent young person might wish to embrace or at least entertain. And this is one of the biggest problems of liberal education, is that rather than teaching a child, hey, here's what's right, here's what's wrong, liberal educators know that if they just let a child run free without much moral guidance, that the child will very likely come to incorrect, improper, immoral conclusions. But hey, let's celebrate kids thinking for themselves. If a kid entertains the idea, or at least, you know, he says, just entertain. If a kid just wants to entertain the idea of going to join ISIS, should we celebrate them for thinking for themselves? No, that's absurd. Kids in public schools coming up with their own ideas and values, what that means is kids having sex with each other, kids watching pornography, kids getting drunk, kids partying, kids doing drugs, kids living in rebellion to God, kids having abortions. That's what the Washington Post means when they argue for kids thinking for themselves. So you know. Which, by the way, the left is thrilled to have kids watching pornography, thrilled to have them being sexual deviants, thrilled if they can get them addicted to pornography. In fact, if you remember back in 2019 over in the UK, the left with their education system, they came out with the disgusting, perverted, pedophilic teaching program called All About Me. That's what it was called. It was called All About Me. And in that program, in that All About Me program, there was a section titled, I don't even know if I'm legally allowed to say this. This was being taught to children who were 6 years old. So I guess I will say it. So reading now from the God, please rain fire and brimstone down on the entirety of the world, even if that means I'll die with everyone else, because even with that stipulation, it'd still be worth it file. The Daily Mail, back in September of 2019, children as young as six are to be given compulsory self. This is so terrible and evil. I don't even want to talk about it. Self-touching lessons. Under a section called Touching Myself, and this is in the All About Me teaching program, teachers are advised to tell children that lots of people like to, and then I can't bring myself to read this part out loud because it's so terrible and disgusting to tell anybody, but especially to tell children. And then it says, because it might feel nice. And then it tells them where they could do it so their parents won't see them. And oh my goodness, it's what a disaster. And so that's the education that the left wants for your kid. You know, I realize that's over in the UK, but you know, the left always points to these other countries and says, hey, we need that here. And obviously that's just around the corner, and you have blatant pedophilia all over the place in the school system. Grooming of children, teachers urging their kids to talk about their sexuality. It's actual pedophilic behavior, and these teachers, they should be put to death for how evil they are. But just so you know, when the Washington Times says that they want kids to think for themselves, they're saying they want kids to have sex and get abortions. That's what they mean by that. Back to the Washington Post article, to turn over all decisions to parents then would risk inhibiting the ability of young people to think independently. You know what this is saying? This is saying that we cannot trust parents because parents might indoctrinate their kids to think bad things. So instead of trusting the parents, let's trust the school system. Let's trust the bureaucracy. Let's trust the corrupt government. Let's trust the government, which everybody agrees that the government is terrible. Every time you talk to anybody on either side, left or right, just say, hey, what do you think about America? What do you think about the government? How are things trending? They always say, terribly, it's evil, it's terrible. Even liberals, they don't like the government, but they're still the ones saying we should trust the government more than parents to raise our children. We should trust the government more than parents, which is obviously asinine. Continuing now with the Washington Post, as the political scientist Rob Reich has argued, minimal autonomy requires, especially for its civic importance, that a child be able to examine his or her own political values and beliefs and those of others with a critical eye, unquote. And a quick aside, school does not exist to teach values. That's not the role of the schools. That's the role of parents and the role of churches. Obviously, kids pick up a lot of values and beliefs in their schools now. That's how it works. But that's not how it should be. That should be the job of the church. And so the article here is making the case that kids should be able to think for themselves. And if you know, if you've ever gone out and done ministry outside of a school, you'll notice that all the kids there, they all come out at you with the same 2 to 3 arguments. They all go to their professors. They say, hey, what's a good argument against these people that are doing ministry outside? And the teachers will give them 1 or 2 answers, a few arguments to try. And then you get hundreds of kids who come out and say the same exact argument over and over and over and over. And it goes to show they are not thinking for themselves. They are not coming up to conclusions on their own. They're being brainwashed and having these ideas and talking points and arguments shoved down their throats with no critical thinking. So this article arguing that kids going through the public school system will help them think for themselves, it's absurd on its face. And quick note about thinking for yourself, I want to read to you some Bible verses, and I'm going to read them out of order, and I'm not going to give you the books, I'm not going to give you the chapters, and I'm not going to give you the verses, because you should go into your Bible and find them yourself, because that would do you a lot of good to get into your Bible and try and find some of these verses that I'm about to read to you. Warning, 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 Will Robinson, there are Bible verses up ahead. For those in the audience who advocate pluralism and diversity, we know here at Bobbinear Live that you would like to censor anyone who would dare quote a Bible verse in public. This notice gives you fair warning that raw, unadulterated truth is about to be uttered. Okay, reading now from the scriptures. Set your mind on things above, not on things of the earth. So our thought lives matter. We can't just be wishy-washy and hope that we come up with the correct conclusion. We have to be very intentional with our thought lives. Now, back to scripture. Where there is no counsel, the people fall. But in the multitude of counselors, there is safety. You get that? In the multitude of counselors, there is safety. You know, that's saying in a multitude of counselors, there's a good chance that you'll get things right. You know, that's not an argument for democracy. But you know your parents are like counselors, and it's good to have guidance, especially when trying to figure out what's right and what's wrong, what your values should be and what your beliefs should be. Trust the Lord with all your heart and do not lean on your own understanding. In all ways, acknowledge him and he will make your paths straight. Now, of course, this isn't to say have blind faith. We read later in scripture, have no fear of them, nor be troubled, but in your hearts honor Christ the Lord as holy, always being prepared to make a defense to anyone who asks you for a reason for the hope that is in you. We also read, we destroy arguments and every lofty opinion raised against the knowledge of God and take every thought captive to obey Christ. So we don't always need to rely fully on our own understanding. We're not to have blind faith. There's another name for blind faith. That's foolishness. But we're not always to lean on our own understanding. And so this idea that you just let kids go and hopefully they figure it out on their own, that's not correct. You need to give children guidance. Otherwise, they will mess it up very badly. Or in the case with these public schools, they will mess it up in the worst way humanly possible. Continuing now, as the Supreme Court noted in Wisconsin versus Yoder, a case that granted Amish parents the widest possible exemption from state control, quote, there is no doubt as to the power of a state having a high responsibility for education of its citizens to impose reasonable regulations for the control and duration of basic education, unquote. The article continues, the state must declare the child to be the most precious treasure of the people. As long as the government is perceived as working for the benefit of the children, the people will happily endure almost any curtailment of liberty and almost any deprivation. So that's the Washington Post arguing that parents will be willing to give up their liberty to teach their children, or what? Oh, shoot. Okay. My producer here is telling me that's not a quote from the Wait a second. No. Oh, geez. Oh, I messed that one up. I blew that one, guys. I'm sorry. The Washington Post didn't say that. That was actually Hitler in Mein Kampf that said that. I confused my two notes here because they're so similar. Let me see. Okay, where was I in the article? Okay, here we go. The article goes on to argue that the sudden push for parental rights is merely a political tactic. So if you're concerned about your kid, the eternal soul of your child, his or her education, that isn't you being concerned for your child. That is a political tactic that you're doing. So the Washington Post says that if you care for your kid, the Washington Post is accusing you, and you should feel personally attacked by the Washington Post if you do not support the school systems wholeheartedly. And you also should note that they view your kids as political assets. The article then goes on to accuse us Republicans and conservatives, although I guess I shouldn't classify myself as a Republican. That's kind of, it's kind of gross. But anyways, the article then goes on to accuse conservatives of being paranoid and of we're making too big of a deal about this, which of course is so, it really is infuriating because what the left, what they do is they make a big deal out of something. They say, hey, the government should be the only ones in charge of educating our children. And that's a big deal. And the right responds and says, well, I think parents should be involved. And then the left responds, well, why are you making such a big deal of this now? This is just such a minor issue and you're making such a big deal of it. And oh my goodness, it's so frustrating. But you know what? I will make a big deal of it because it's important. And if you remember Mr. Jack Schneider, if you remember, you started off this article by saying it's a radical notion to assume parents ever had the right to teach their own kids. That's how you started off this article. And then you're accusing us of being paranoid. Oh my goodness. You're absolutely unbearable. It's funny, in this article, one of the sentences, and the Republicans employing it right now, it being the paranoid style, the Republicans employing it right now have two particular targets in mind. It's kind of funny. The first target that he lists is the public education system, which that's the first one he lists. But then he never gives the second target, which is, it's kind of funny as an author writing this, he disses homeschooling and then he can't even write a good article. That's kind of humorous. You know, I was taught when writing essays and whatnot and articles that if I'm going to start a list, I can't just quit halfway through my list. But yeah, reading the article here, and I don't see the second target that he had in mind when he was going to list all two of them. Oh my goodness, that would have been so difficult to list the other target. But he says the first target is the public education system, which, oh my goodness, I wish. That's what I'm going to say. I wish that Republicans were targeting the public education system. Actually, you know what? I will lead the charge. Abolish the public school system. If you're in the audience right now, go ahead and get your kids out of the public school system. Attend your public school board meetings and try and convince other parents to also get their kids out of the public school system. At an annual cost of nearly $750 billion, tuition-free open enrollment education represents one of the nation's most substantial commitments to the public good. Ha! That's what I have to say to that. Ha! Anyone else remember that girl who was just raped and then the school tried to cover it up? Is that just me? Am I the only one who remembers that? Anyways, the Washington Times thinks that that's one of the nation's most substantial commitments to the public good is covering up for rapists. Anyways, then the article goes on to talk about critical race theory and, oh, you know, it's not actually taught in K through 9 schools, yada, yada, yada. Which, of course, he lies through his teeth. Jack, I accuse you. Jack, and I call you to repentance, the author of this article in the Washington Post. Continuing now, courts have found that parents have great authority when it comes to deciding how to raise and educate their children. Jack, you keep doing this as an author. You need to stop writing sentences and then immediately contradicting the sentence you just wrote. You need to stop doing that. This right, however, does not mean that public schools must cater to parents' individual ideas about education. Parents can opt out of the public system if they wish and pay to send their children to private or religious schools, but even there, parental rights remain subject to state regulation and override. When an opponent declares, "I will not come over to your side," I calmly say, "Your child belongs to us already. What are you? You will pass on. Your descendants, however, now stand in the new camp. In a short time, they will know nothing else but this new community." That's what this guy, I read another Hitler quote accidentally. Oh, I thought that was the same one. That flowed so well. And who gave me these notes? Oh, I did? Oh, my goodness. Anyways, I'm sorry, Jack. What you wrote was so similar to Hitler. I got them confused, and I'm sorry. That's my bad. I apologize for that one, Jack. But Jack, I'll go ahead and do the courtesy of reading the last sentence that you had in your article. "Turned against their schools and their democracy, they may wake from their conspiratorial fantasies to find a pile of rubber and a heap of ashes." Well, you know, if I were to wake up tomorrow from my, quote, conspiratorial fantasies, if I were to wake up tomorrow and found the public school system as a pile of rubble and a heap of ashes, I would fall on my face and weep tears of joy and thank the Lord Almighty for his mercy and his justice. Okay, yeah, so that's reason number one to keep your kids out of the public schools. If anyone at home wants to start a tally, now would be a great time with reason number one to keep your kids out of the public schools because apparently parents don't have the right to shape their kids' school curriculums. All right, moving on now from bad to worse. A 2-year-old disabled Jewish girl dies after the UK court orders the removal of her life support. This is from LifeSite News. And if you were a big fan of Bob Enyart, LifeSite News was Bob Enyart's favorite news website. From over in London, the 2-year-old Alta Fixler, the girl at the center of a years-long court battle over her right to life, has died in hospice. Following an effective death sentence handed down by a British high court in May, a raging legal battle to save Alta's life concluded this month, all possible legal recourse exhausted. Her last battle was to be granted the permission to have her life support removed at home rather than in a hospital or hospice. Even this small mercy was withheld. Now, there are godly principles for execution, but in this case with this 2-year-old girl, the UK courts, I would say they botched it on this one, and I would say she should not have been executed. I don't think she was guilty of any capital crimes. The UK court, I guess they disagree with that. On October 18th, just over an hour after having her life-saving treatment removed, Alta died in a children's hospice. In a statement, a family spokesperson said, "Sad news, little Alta Fixler's life support was turned off this afternoon, and she died at the hospice with her parents by her side." Alta was 8 weeks premature. She suffered from severe brain damage at birth. Alta remained on mechanical ventilation and received 24-hour life-sustaining care at a hospital over there in England. In May of 2021, however, the hospital staff advised her parents that Alta, then 2 years old, would not recover from her condition and even with round-the-clock care, might only live another 2 or 3 years. Doctors added that, in their opinion, the burdens of treatment are going to produce pain and suffering for Alta, and that her quality of life is severely limited. So this is a pro-choice talking point, right? If I think that he or she wouldn't be happy, let's kill him or her. And what is the standard for that? Is there any test for it, or is it just fully arbitrary. Oh, it looks like it's just fully arbitrary. Alta's parents objected, wishing to continue treatment. They received expert advice that Alta does not suffer any pain at all. Unwilling to acquiesce to the Fixler's wishes, however, the hospital subsequently fought at the high court to have the support removed. In his decision, which was back in May, Justice Alistair MacDonald noted that doctors had argued it would be in Alta's, quote, best interests to die by withdrawing what he admitted was, quote, life-sustaining treatment, including artificial ventilation. So you know that thing that we, you know, usually we call it life, and there's the other part of that, which is death, and usually we don't like death. Turns out by this murderer justice over in England that thing that we thought was bad, death, is actually in your best interests. That's an interesting take he has on it. Alta's parents insisted that condemning their child to die was not only against their wishes as those who had brought Alta into the world, but abhorrent to their Orthodox Jewish faith, which upholds the sanctity of life. They showed that hospitals in Jerusalem were willing to receive Alta in order to continue her treatment at no expense to the British public purse, and argued that they should be allowed to transfer their daughter. Ultimately, MacDonald declared that, quote, no medical benefit could be found in Alta being taken to Israel, adding that further care provides, quote, no prospect of recovery. The judge ruled, in line with the opinion of doctors, that it was in the child's, quote, best interests for the treatment that is currently sustaining her precious life now to be withdrawn, unquote, and instead suggested that she slowly be put to death, again insisting that it is in her best interests. The Fixlers subsequently contested the decision, but MacDonald's decision was upheld in a ruling handed down in which judges said they were, quote, entirely satisfied that ending the treatment rather than receiving full-time care in Israel was in Alta's best interest. Following the final decision by the court to pull Alta's life support in a hospice and not at home, a spokesperson noted that the family was, quote, distraught at the decision taken by the court to end her life, as one would be. When someone murders your daughter, usually that is a pretty good reason to be distraught. The Fixler family argued in response that making life-changing decisions on behalf of children ought to be a parental right, and it is important that we open up the debate around this. We call the government to look at the current legislation and change it, which on face value, I agree with that. I think that making life-changing decisions on the behalf of children, obviously if that means changing them from living to dead as done via abortion, I think that's obviously terrible and evil and should not be legal. So overall, we could rephrase that and say, you know, murder should be illegal. That'd be pretty good to do. Yeah, and the question that always comes to mind, we see a lot of stories like this. The question that comes to mind is, if they used a bullet, would it be wrong? If they took a gun and put it in Alta's mouth and then shot her and her brain exploded, would that convince these horrible, wicked people that it is wrong? Because that's what you're doing. You're sick, you're a murderer, and you should be put to death for the murder of this 2-year-old girl. And you know, I pray as you're being walked to the electric chair that you come to know Christ. But I will not defend you and advocate that you should not be placed on the electric chair. A word to Alta's parents and to her family. I'm dreadfully sorry that this has happened to you. It is a tragedy which I could not even imagine the suffering that you are going through. But there is some good news in all of this, which is that Alta is now in heaven with Jesus Christ. And you can see her again if you come to know Christ and accept him as your Lord and Savior, which I plead that you do if you haven't already. Some more good news about this is that there will be justice for both the doctors who argued to murder your daughter, for the nurse who actually was the one who pulled the plug. There will be justice for this MacDonald. There will be justice in this life. Possibly not, but in the next, on Judgment Day, there will be justice. That is some comforting news. I do want to point out that a lot of the time it's okay to let a dying person die. That's not always wrong. But little Alta here, she had 2-3 years left to live, they said. And that's 2 or 3 years that she would have to recover, or for the parents to find a new treatment, for medical advances to happen that would save her life. There's a lot that can happen in 2 years. And oh my goodness, I'm so sorry. My heart really goes out to the parents in this case and the rest of her family. And I am grateful that I will get to meet Alta one day in heaven. Now, it should be pointed out that Alta, her case is not the first of its kind in Britain. Recent years have shown similar tragedies involving disabled children whose chance at living was taken away from them by the courts over there across the pond. You may remember a few years back, international attention was given to Charlie Gard and Alfie Evans, both of whom suffered debilitating disorders and whose opportunity for treatment overseas was inhibited by legal intervention. Evans, like Alta, suffered brain damage and was on life support at a Liverpool hospital. When the doctors again declared that it was in the boy's best interests to remove him from a ventilator. And in that situation, there was a hospital in, I believe it was Rome, that said they were willing to receive Evans for treatment. And the Italian government had actually even granted emergency citizenship to aid the transfer. But the judge declared that he could not fly out to Rome. And so Evans' ventilator was removed that day. You know, he was able to breathe on his own for a little bit without medical assistance, but then he died 4 days later. Charlie Gard, he was denied access to care by the British courts. He had a rare mitochondrial disease that he suffered with. His parents, you probably remember the story of Charlie Gard, but his parents, Chris and Connie, they raised more than $1.5 million to transfer him to the U.S., but the hospital where he was being treated, the Great Ormond Street Hospital, gosh, ironically, they thought that his life support should be pulled against his parents' wishes. They thought that he should be murdered. Once again, in the situation, I would like to ask the Great Ormond Street Hospital, gosh, how about had I come in and used a bullet or a knife and I stabbed Charlie, would you have thought that was wrong? Because had I come in and stabbed Charlie, I'm assuming you would have said that was murder. And I want you to know that what you did was the same. And it was disgusting and wicked and terrible. With Charlie, that was the same, where the hospital argued in court against the right of Charlie to survive. And the English and European courts ultimately ruled that the hospital could block out his parents and kill Charlie. There were big world leaders at the time, Pope Francis and Trump, who said they would fight to allow Charlie to leave the hospital and receive care in the United States. But I think it was on the same day, if I remember correctly, that Trump said that the hospital removed his ventilator and that he died that same day. Absolutely terrible. England should be ashamed of themselves. They are a bunch of cowards and pathetic weasels. And echoing King David's attitude, I hate them with perfect hatred and my soul abhors them. What terrible, evil, wicked people. You know, parents don't just have the right, but they actually have the responsibility. They have the responsibility to protect and to care for their kids. And these courts taking away that responsibility and that right, it's sick. It's demented. And our hearts go out to the parents. You know, we can't really be surprised like this about these stories when we hear them, because we live in a culture of murder and death, and murder of babies too. It's not just murder of, you know, one gang member murders another. It's a mom who moms love their children with immense love, and the moms are murdering their own babies. So when we live in a culture of death like this, it's not surprising when there's a parent who actually wants to do some good, but then the courts say, nope, nope, that's not going to happen. If you're not going to kill your kid, then we will. Now, speaking of a culture of death, that actually brings us into our third segment. I don't know if you guys are on Twitter. If you're not, I recommend that you keep it that way, because Twitter is a hellscape that you should avoid with all of your might. But if you're on Twitter, there's this account called Libs of TikTok. So TikTok is another social media platform, and the account Libs of TikTok on Twitter kind of compiles some of the most absurd things that they have to say. So let's play this video from Libs of TikTok.
At no point ever has it mattered whether it's just a clump of cells or a fully fledged person already accepted to Harvard University. It has never, ever mattered when life begins. The point is that a person cannot use another person's body without their permission. By forcing women to share their bodies with fetuses to keep them alive, you are actually suggesting that fetuses should have more rights than any other person in the world, and that people with uteruses should have less rights. If you want a fetus to have the same rights as other people, I hate to break it to you, but you'd be pro-choice.
So I don't know about you guys, but the first thing I thought when I heard that was, wow, I really missed 30 seconds ago before I knew that this video existed. And the cringe that this video radiates is palpable. So this cringe radiating TikTok user starts off by saying that it does not matter whether or not the fetus in the womb is a person. It doesn't matter when life begins. All that matters is the mother, which of course is absurd, because that's the entire anti-abortion argument, is that, hey, this is a person. It's a baby. It's wrong to kill a baby. That's the crux of the entire anti-abortion position. So it does matter. If we were to be convinced that it was not a baby, then we would think that abortion is fine. But that is the problem, is that it is a baby, and therefore killing babies is wrong and abortion is wrong. It reminds me of a few years back, there was that abortion spokesman who said that we can't focus on the baby. If we focus on the baby, that's a losing issue. We have to focus on the mothers, because the mothers are a winning issue, because they recognize that if you talk about the baby, it'll be condemning to their position. So they say, don't talk about the baby, talk about the mothers. And that strategy is what the entire pro-choice movement is trying to do. They're trying to ignore the victims and focus solely on the oppressors and what's best for the oppressors. And when you say, well, what about the victims? They say, oh, don't even talk about the victims. We're not here to talk about the victims. We're here to talk about the oppressors. And typically, it's not even worthwhile to fight on the enemy's ground and talk about the mom. You should pull the focus back to the baby. And that's what I recommend you do most of the time. Right now, I want to talk about her argument just because I want to call out some inconsistencies with it. As I said, if you are in, say, a debate or an argument about abortion, I recommend you don't go down these paths and you stick back to the baby. What about the baby? No, it's a cute baby. The baby has dreams. The babies are adorable. Here's what babies look like. They're so cute. That type of thing tends to be more effective. But for now, I'm going to make an exception just to talk about her logic. And so what she says here is that a person cannot use another person's body without their permission. So a baby who is in your womb, that is a person. And I do like how she says the baby is a person. It's, you know, it shows that she's cold-hearted, that she's willing to kill a person, a baby, instead of to care for the baby. But she uses the word person, which is appropriate. And she says a person cannot use another person's body without their permission. So how does she think that a baby should survive through the abortion holocaust? Let's say it's little baby Alta over there in the UK. And say, when she was conceived, should she have gone to her parents and said, hey, guys, can I use your body? Should she have gone to the government and filled out a form? Is that what you're suggesting? Oh, yeah, of course not. You recognize that it's absurd. Secondly, what's ironic about this is that these pro-choicers, they tend to, you know, at least for a lot of the time, not always, they tend to think that murder outside of the womb is wrong. They always say murder inside of the womb, that's fine and that's liberating. But murder outside of the womb, a lot of the time, they say that's wrong. And say you were to kill a six-year-old, a lot of these people would say, yeah, that's wrong. And they would even agree that killing a six-year-old through neglect, through not feeding the child, would be wrong. And I'm assuming that this, woman here, she would also agree that killing a child via neglect, starving the child to death, not going to the store and buying some peanut butter and jelly, that not feeding that child would be immoral. Even though that mom who's going to the store to buy some peanut butter and jelly for her kid, even though she has to use her own physical body without being asked by the child to provide for that child, she still has to do it. And if she doesn't do it, she goes to jail because she's a murderer. What's more is I'm sure that this woman is pro-vaccine mandates, pro-forcing other people to use their bodies for her benefit without permission. I'm sure she's completely for that. These liberals also love to say that healthcare is an inherent human right. That's what they say. They say healthcare is an inherent human right, which I don't know if you know this, but healthcare, what that is, you know, say like with a doctor taking care of somebody, that is a doctor using his body to care for another. And so when they say that healthcare is a human right, they are saying I am entitled and that everybody is entitled for these doctors to care for them. They're saying that that is their right that cannot be taken away. And so when libs come up with these, you know, insane arguments, keep in mind that most of the time they don't even believe them. They don't even believe their own arguments that they're telling you. They're just trying to come up with something, anything to justify their madness and their insanity and their wickedness. And it's up to us to hold their feet to the fire and to not let them do that. But as I said before, when something like this comes up, always just take it back to the baby. Abortion is wrong because it's a baby, and it's always wrong to intentionally kill an innocent baby. But anyways, that about wraps it up here for us on Bob and Yurt Live. I want to remind you that this Friday at 6 p.m. Mountain Time, 7 p.m. Central, there is a debate. Will Duffy and Chris Fisher are tag teaming defending open theism. That'll be on the Practical Faith YouTube channel. That's this Friday, October 29th. I want to invite you to join us tomorrow for Theology Thursday, and then Friday with Fred Williams. I believe he's concluding his show with Perry Little. That should be a lot of fun. We ask you to support us at kgov.com/store. We got to pay the bills here at Bob and Yurt Live. Hope you all have a great day. This is Dominic Enyart for Bob and Yurt Live, reminding you to do right and risk the consequences.